The Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting will come to order. We are meeting here April 9th, 2024. It is 5 p.m. in person and virtually via Teams at the Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Jensen Room. Rules of conduct. The Board of Directors of the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority encourages the public to attend monthly business meetings as well as any special meetings or workshops of the board. The monthly business meeting agenda dictates time for public comment on agenda items and other issues of concern. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment, and refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. You will be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. A roll call. Director Carlton?
Here.
Director Gogas?
Here.
Director Stradska?
Here.
Director Price?
Here.
I'm Director Donahue, the chair. We'll identify our guests. Would you state your name for the record, sir?
David Sears.
Stephanie Starosca Welch.
Thank you. The minutes of the March 12, 2024 business meeting. Are there any corrections or additions?
Tom, I also wanted to mention that we've got Jeb Pippinger and Rochelle on remote.
Oh, thank you. Hearing no corrections or additions, I'll entertain a motion. Director Price?
I'll move that we approve the March 12, 2024 business meeting minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those in opposed, nay. Motion carried. We'll move to the financial report. Accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st, 2024. Are there any questions about those accounts?
I got a couple. Card services, Rochelle, are you on?
Yeah, go ahead.
There, for Charles, charges, I think about the Charles certification. For 255, was that the CDL class?
No, it's just I think it was a wastewater. You have to apply for the certification and you have to pay for a test, both.
Oh, prior to the test? Wow.
Yeah, I think there's a fee for the exam. I think that's probably what it was.
Okay, and then we got an AED for Horn Creek?
We did.
Do we have one at the main building?
We do.
Right.
Excuse me.
Page one. Do we still have any of the old employees that are paying for their own medical through us? Because we used to do that.
I don't.
Cobra?
Yeah.
No, we don't have. Nobody is any longer on that.
Okay.
Nobody is taken out.
And parametrics on page 3 of 5, Rupel Street project. We're paying. Didn't we pay them all in a lump sum to them for that project?
For Rupel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure if this is the charge. But what happens is they submit periodic progress payments, and we've made 3 of those to date. But I'm surprised it would be on there. Is that what he's referring to, Rochelle?
Yeah, it's the 494.84 parametrics for Rupel.
Oh, that's the engineering stuff. Well, we've still got some lingering support with parametrics on that project.
So will that all close when the project is?
Yeah, they're working on the as-built drawings right now.
Oh, okay.
So what the contractor did is now that the contract or the project is far enough along, the contractor made redline markups to the original set of plans about changes that were made in the field during the construction. And they submitted those to Parametrics, and Parametrics is working on getting those catted up for us.
So that'll be on file for future?
Yep, yep.
So we won't have to do anything, go marking and?
Nope. All the everything that was completed as it was as built will be captured in those updated drawings.
Okay. And then there was a Swabby Williams water rights lawyer.
Yeah, that's our attorney. I think an inquiry made on my part regarding water rights, just following up on a couple of loose ends related to those, and that's got to be what it is.
Because didn't we finish all the water rights over on Horn Creek?
A lot of the planning and the discussions related to that have been completed. We still have both our permit and our partial perfection, our certificate, that is still pending with the Oregon Water Resources Department.
So I take it that's going to take a little bit.
It seems to take a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It does.
Okay. And then filing fee for the state, there's two of them.
For what?
It doesn't say. It just says Secretary of State filing fee.
Oh, those were probably the filing fees for our this last audit, for one thing, wasn't it, Rochelle?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Go ahead.
The Schwab Williams, the filing fee for the, not Schwab, Secretary of State filing fee for $125 twice.
Yeah, and we have to file with the Secretary of State every time we finish a financial audit.
Oh, so that's the one that you just did with our Pauly group?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I got. Thank you.
Are there any other questions about accounts payable? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st of 2024.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st, 2024. There's no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Unanimous. Motion carried. The general ledger, fiscal year 23-24. Any comments or about the general ledger?
What are we on budget?
Yes, we are. Yep. Overall, we are on budget. I think we're just a little over on one account. Is that right, Rochelle? But all the others were on target. You're muted, Rochelle, if you're trying to speak.
There she is.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
The fiscal year, there was a question whether, from a budgetary standpoint, are we on target? I think there was one category where we might be just a little over budget, but certainly on target, or under budget on the remaining ones. Is that correct?
Right. There's a couple line items where we are over budget, but overall, in that fund, we are still under budget, and we will be safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. If no other comments about the general ledger, we'll move on to item 7, the manager's report. John?
Thank you, Tom. A couple of things, an update on Rupel. Rupel is essentially done, except for some paving work that was slated to be done, where the pipeline transitions from the east side of the road to the west to miss the sewer line and come back. All the trench lines have been paved. The contractor was able to do that type of paving within their own skill set and with their own equipment. The whole road paving in these two transition sections, they are not able to do that. They need to subcontract that out to a paving company. I sent an email to Bill Howard asking for an update on that, because to my knowledge, the paving companies, the asphalt plants are now up and running and have been for a couple weeks. The response I got from Earthworks was that he has contacted all three of the local paving companies, and whoever gets there first gets the job, to use his exact words. So that's what we know. I believe once that paving is done, it'll be time to do a final walkthrough that will include not only me representing the authority's interests, but also the county representing theirs.
Excuse me just a second. For the record, let it be noted that Tim Hirsch from Civic City Sun arrived at 5:06 p.m. Excuse me.
So outside of that, there's not much I can update the board about in terms of completion of the project, but it is essentially, to my knowledge, that is all that is left to be done. So we're certainly hopeful that we get that asphalt subcontractor out there soon, and they can get that work done, and then we can move toward final completion and acceptance from us as well as the county.
Have we had any issues as far as the water, the leaks, no problems with that?
No, not since the line's been put in.
Has anybody complained about water running into their yard because the change of the diversion of the roof contour of the road?
Not lately. We had some initial concerns from a couple of property owners that the construction work may have changed the dynamics of the drainage on the road during heavy rain or flooding events. But the contractor has corrected that, and we have not heard any additional concerns.
Now, would that fall back on the county after things are done? As far as, that's a county road, right?
No.
No.
Oh, it's private.
It's a local access road, which means it's the county has administrative jurisdiction over the road. That's why the county is involved with the permitting and the final acceptance of the road. But outside of that, it is a local access road.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I'm getting just a little bit ahead of myself, because these projects were actually completed on April 2nd and 3rd. But that's close enough to March to report it in my March manager's report. The lift station upgrades at Beachy and at Madrona are now successfully completed. And so we've just got two more of the small package stations to do, and they will be in very good shape. I mentioned a while back we should probably quit tracking rags caught in our pumps because they become a non-factor. Well, now they're even more of a non-factor.
Yay.
So, so Roger and Cindy are the two remaining ones to be done. They will be much more challenging from a permitting standpoint because Cindy is not only in the floodplain, it's in the floodway. So we're expecting some difficulty, or at least some administrative some government permitting difficulties, but I'm confident that we can overcome that and get this project done. In light of the potential difficulties, though, I'm already working on submitting for the development permits for those sites.
For the flooding problem?
Yes. Yeah. And so, so I'm sure we'll get through that, but we'll have to jump through more hoops just to prove that we don't need a no-rise analysis and other types of long and painful processes.
Kudos to you and the staff for getting those next two done.
Well, thank
those
you.
Those are huge. And,
thank you. They were projects in need, and glad to be able to keep making these improvements. And these stations will now be in very good shape for many years to come.
It's nice that everything is all the same of all the pump stations.
All standardized.
To our parts and stuff like that, and regs, don't have to hear about that anymore.
Yeah, no more having to pull pumps, and one pump on the shelf will be able to drop into any one of these. So
are those pretty readily available if needed, if you needed a two?
Yeah, they are. They're
like a standardized.
Yeah, no problems with that. The pumps are easily found and readily available. The control panels take a long time, but the pumps are not, that should be no problem. I mentioned earlier that Amanda Graves here with KCC had approached us about some grant money that they were willing to contribute to the trail maintenance on the BLM property. I must have really misunderstood, because I thought it was a done deal. And then I was recently received an email from Amanda that said that they were not able to get the grant. However, just today, when I came in to set up, Amanda said that they had some kids who were trying to do community service projects. And recently they went out to the property and was able to remove a fair amount of the Scotch broom, which is one of our requirements, as well as planning to do some, utilize that volunteer group to do some trail maintenance for us. So I'm very appreciative that Amanda and KCC are thinking about us and our needs with that trail system. The grant money is not forthcoming, and therefore the work that Bros and Hose was going to do, not only to the trail but to the bench area up at the top of the trail, is not going to happen. But the success of this trail system is going to depend largely on volunteers. And I'm glad that there are still people thinking about us, even this group of kids that are actively seeking community service projects, and thinking about us and that trail as one of those projects, I think is great. Just a little more detail about that. The idea is that Josh from Bros and Hose is still going to go up there and clear some of that brush along the trail, and then the kids will pick up the limbs and take care of that. So
are they working together?
I've got to get more detail from Amanda about that, because she was telling me that just briefly as I was setting up, and I wasn't able to get a lot of detail from her before the meeting started.
I think it's wonderful that the kids are willing to do that. I guess from a potential liability standpoint for the authority, I would like to have hands on who's coordinating that, what their responsibility level is, who's funding it. You know, because this is property that we're responsible for. So
It's property that we're responsible for, and not only that, well, it'll come up later in the meeting. It's property that we may need to consider whether that trail system is going to open again anytime soon or not.
Right. Yeah,
we'll
come back to it.
And, you know, if... Oh, there she is.
Do you need me? I'm here, buddy.
No.
Did you have any questions for Amanda about...
No, I just didn't know about... Oh, yeah, sorry.
I think that those are the questions that I have. I will pass to you for your handling.
Okay. So the volunteer help up there, you said it was some children or kids?
17-year-olds.
Oh, not so much children.
So it's class of 2025. They're doing community service through some of their, they're getting some credit. They have to do it for one of their classes. And so they chose, I was trying to get them to come here and do some landscaping, but they decided they wanted to go to the park.
Okay.
So I got... Josh Venti with Burrows and Hose to do some machine maintenance for the NBCA park. And so to do some machine maintenance, pulling up a lot of that really hefty Scotch broom, and then the kids came in a couple days later today and did the hand pulling. And there were shovels and digging up stuff. They did a great job. I mean, there were 35 of them. Not small.
And is there somebody coordinating that effort?
So it was, I was there, there's a couple staff from the school, and then also Bros and Hose had at least three staff members there. So they were training them on how to use certain materials. They were generally hand pulling. I brought them gloves and... But yeah,
that's on the NBCA park, not on the BLM property.
Exactly.
Okay, because we're responsible for the BLM property.
Yeah,
the
okay,
NBCA
okay.
Is, that's their deal, and we're
so,
not
but
buying
if,
that.
So, if we said they would like to do more things like this with smaller groups, like
so we
12.
Can think ahead.
And
too.
So we suggested both Josh Venti, myself, and Hannah Holgren, who's the one who brought her students, about possibly doing maintenance on that trail if you all would allow it. It was just about like the potential of a future date and maybe they'd be interested
great.
In doing it. So well, if you want that, you can help organize it.
Didn't we, wasn't there a few years ago where the middle schoolers went out there and planted trees and stuff on the property?
On the BLM property? I don't recall that.
Because I remember driving bus and dropping them off there. That was, well... Yeah.
It must have been a few years. If there was any liability exposure, with a dedicated group like this, I think we could easily get a rider on our.
I think we can let John pursue that.
Yeah, and I'm a little reluctant to get too deep into it because it's not an agenda.
Exactly.
But.
Okay. And I'll just say what we did because of Scotch Broom, we actually wrote up a waiver that all the students. Parents had to see and sign because in Scotch Broom there could be some allergies they're not aware of, and so we had them all. They didn't need a permission slip because it's within the county, but we made them sign one for NBCA.
Okay.
Scotch Broom.
Okay.
So, are you a grant writer?
I am.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to talk to you more. I'll get
and
with
working
you.
With Pacific City Pathways to help them with some maintenance if you guys want. So I will
great.
Have an update for you.
Excellent.
After that.
Excellent.
Okay. Thank you.
My concern would be if we shut the trail down because of liability, I don't think we should have people working on the trail until we opened it back up again. That would be my concern. I mean, it seems like the recreational immunity issue should apply to everybody that gets on the property, not just people who are walking on it but not working on it. Does that make sense?
It does, but if there's a liability issue caused by our lack of maintenance that would keep the trail closed, how do we ever reopen the trail unless that maintenance is performed?
Mm-hmm. Questions for insurance agents and lawyers. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
I don't think any of us at this table have that background.
Yes. So just a couple other things. Sad to report that we lost Charles Connett. He has taken a position with a water and wastewater utility near Fairbanks, Alaska, which I think, we wish him well. They made him an offer he can't refuse, but a part of it involves living and working in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Well,
so,
wasn't he working up there?
What an adventure. No, that was Jason.
That was Jason.
No, before that, when he came, he worked here and then went up to Alaska and then came back.
I don't know. No, I don't think that was Charles.
It was Charles.
Mm-hmm.
But we're happy for him.
But we are happy for him. And our pain is greatly eased by the fact that we have already hired a very good candidate to fill his vacant position. His name is Luis, and he, amazingly enough, he was able to start his first day of work today.
Wow.
Yay!
Right on.
So he's going to be a great addition to the team. Of course, there's a training period, as we can all imagine, but we're very pleased that we were able to find such a good quality candidate so quick.
What certs does he have? Is it the same as Charles?
Well, he's an operator in training, so they generally don't come to us with certifications, but he does have a Class A CDL, which is something we can definitely put to use.
So how many threes do we... Wasn't Charles a three?
No, Charles had several ones and one level two.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
But that's about it for the manager's report. Tom, back to you.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move on to item 8, unfinished business, resolution 24XXX. So just for the record, this is a major housekeeping resolution. Resolution 1703, which was in 2017, related to board member duties and responsibilities. And in that resolution, it stated that we were going to use the Special Districts Association of Oregon model guidelines for board member duties and responsibilities as a general guideline for board members. And 1703 also stated that if we were going to add specific duties or responsibilities or liabilities or anything else, we would file an additional resolution. Well, here we are now that we were thinking of adding two more resolutions. So now we'd have four resolutions that would basically should be only one resolution. So 1703 had the guidelines of the Special District Association of Oregon. So what 24XXX, we haven't named it yet, rescind 1703, and the following board member resolution 1801, limitations of board member authority, and we created this resolution to incorporate both of those and the two new resolutions relating to board member activities that we were going to add. And we were going to keep in this new resolution, the Special Districts Association of Oregon model guidelines, and any future revisions that SDAO may have as the basic operating procedure, for lack of a better word, for what board members do. And we were going to take resolution 1801 and the two new resolutions we were going to incorporate and put them into an exhibit B. In the original resolution, the SDO guidelines were noted as exhibit A. So now we're going to take the directives in 1801, which shows limitations of board member authority, and put that into resolution B. And the two new items also into exhibit B, and that was relating to harassment and an investigative policy as it relates to board members. So that's where we're at. We've John and I and Sean and everybody's had their two cents. John, Sean, and I did most of the OMA's work early on, and everybody we've bounced this off of some legal, our legal team early on, and our HR consultant early on. So what I would like to do for this resolution, 24XXX, you've all had a chance to read it. The only the latest changes were in Exhibit B, the new thing. I hope you all had to read it. You had a chance to read it. But from now on, with this resolution, we rescind 1703 and we rescind 1801, and any new items that go that would reflect on board members only would go into Exhibit B in the future and rescind this resolution. So we only have one working resolution or operating policy as it refers to board members' responsibilities and limitations of authority and anything else that relates to board members. So there's only one working resolution at any one time. Otherwise, we're going to have a half a dozen. Anytime somebody comes up with a new idea, it's going to go on and on. So it is kind of cumbersome. There is an Exhibit A, which will always be in any future resolution that reflects the basic guidelines of the SDA or organization. An Exhibit B are any specific instances that we think we need to add in the future to relating to board members. So that's where we're at. Comments?
Yeah, I've got a few. So resolution number 24XX, there was on page 8, it was the...
Is this the current one now that we sent out today? Or yesterday?
No, yeah, this is the... Yes, it is, because I punched holes in it, because I've got so many...
Okay, page 8.
Yes. What I'd like to see...
We're talking about the top deal is parliamentary procedure,
right.
Forms of action.
Okay. And I've kind of had issues with this, that we go by rules of order by...
No, we don't. We do not follow Robert's rules of order.
So what... We have our own rules because... So... What are the rules? We don't have anything in a document form saying what our rules are.
That's true. Robert's rules are a general guideline, and we generally follow Robert's rules as far as procedural for motions and that sort of thing. But
meetings.
We have not, and it's very common for organizations not to adopt Robert's rules if they have... want to have special rules, because to amend Robert's rules, they have to amend it themselves. So a lot of organizations use them as a general guideline.
Right, just like we're using the SDAO
correct
stuff. But I'd like to see something in there that covers something. I mean, we don't use
what
Robert
specifically.
When we choose to, there was an instance, I should have wrote it down. To meet the needs, we don't have any detailed rules of the other things that cover a small board. That was just one
we're
of
the... Using, yes. Basically, we're using the guidelines of SDAO. They also mention procedural rules in the SDAO guidelines.
Okay.
So basically, that's what we are following.
Well, shouldn't that be stated in there?
Well, it is.
It
you've
is.
Got forms of actions. You've got forums.
Okay.
You've got voting. You've got...
Oh, okay. Oh, I just thought it should be in that paragraph of Parliament.
It's right below it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And then... page 20. It refers to approve as I really don't like the word approve. I would like to see anything that says approve, it should be voted on, because you're stating we have to all approve, and maybe we don't. Some people could disagree, but as a majority of a board, it goes with that. I mean, this is, to me, what it's saying to me, I have to approve it. And I think sometimes we don't all agree on this stuff.
Well, in this case, you are in Exhibit A. These are, on page 20, you are in the general guidelines of the SDAO. Page 20 is a page in those guidelines. And those are general guidelines. Now, we all vote on a budget, so it's really a non-issue. It refers to, the page before it.
As a body, as a board, I can understand that, but...
Just a second. This is a sample of board member responsibilities, including communications, financial, policies, objectives, and plans. So this is a sample board member responsibilities, which is part of the SDAO general guidelines. So we're not going to change this at all.
Okay, because it's SDAO.
It's the SDAO general guidelines.
Okay.
We are going to use those as general guidelines.
Okay.
And we have been since 2017.
And we have been. Best we can, I guess.
That was it that I had. Oh, yeah, there is something else. I mean, because I've got your copy. I've got the one that we didn't it change from the first board packet going out to the second board coming out?
Did you get the second?
I sent it all out to everybody, but not with a whole lot of notice.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
So which one are we going by? The one that you sent out last?
The one that you... came to pick up the second time.
Okay.
The new one,
that's the
one.
Okay. And the only changes between that one and the first one were mostly in Exhibit B.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading through, I liked yours on all that. I liked the explanation of dictionary terms, which I don't believe it's on.
Okay, here's the reason why. In Exhibit B, I eliminated a lot of those dictionary terms.
Okay.
I kept just the major ones. And the reason was it was getting a little wordy, but the reason I put definitions in the first place, because I've written a few laws or prospective Oregon revised statutes, and the first thing that they put in there are definitions. So in the past, I mean, sometimes things left unsaid are assumed, and they're assumed the wrong way. So a definition is important. So these definitions that I did leave in, and I'll be specific here. For example, what an employee is, what a constituent is, what harassment or sexual harassment means. And the other ones were, the last one was inappropriate, what that means. So I used those definitions, and if you notice, I took them from several different dictionaries, so that if you wanted, they were all so close, I wanted to make sure that there was a broad spectrum of thought on those basic definitions. But in this case, instead of putting them in front, because a resolution is different than writing a Oregon revised statute, I put them in the rear. And that is a little unusual for a resolution or an ordinance, but because the topics are so precise, we needed to have precise definitions, is what my feeling was.
Well, I like that you put in the definition word of directors with the ORs on that back page.
Well, those are eliminated on the new one.
On the new one. I like them in there. I mean...
It's wordy. I mean, you can look them up. They're stated.
But then it gives the specific OR number. That's what I mean, it's actually in there.
Like I said, the OR numbers are mentioned in the pros, and it can be looked up. Otherwise, I had half a page of ORs and explanations. It was wordy, it wasn't necessary, I felt. Ann, do you have a comment?
I do have a comment if you're finished.
You have any
conversation with
me? I just wanted to just say, yeah, I like the way that you did yours.
Well, thank you, but you can keep the old copy.
I got the Tom's written on.
I commented basically this to the two of you in an email last week, and I would like to say for the record, so everyone else hears the same thing, that I think the intentions with this are very clear. I applaud the parsing of the issues and the clear presentation of those. I'm still very concerned about the style and the content, even with this new revision. And in all the years I've served on the board, and don't ask me when I started, I can't remember, but I've never been directly involved in drafting resolutions. So I don't know exactly what the process has been in the past, but my concern is that resolutions and ordinances, of course, are effectively rules and laws that govern our operation.
Policy, I think, would be a better word.
Well, policies become rules. I mean, that's how you implement policies, is by conducting business on a rule basis. And it's my impression that our legal advisors have, in conjunction with the authority manager, have drafted those resolutions in the past to fully address all of the legal issues, to bring some consistency in the way resolutions are written and presented. And that they've worked closely with the authority manager, but basically in accomplishing the board's goals. And I think what the board's responsibility is to make the goals clear. And then I think the next step, at this point, we have a really good draft. And I think the next step, I feel pretty strongly, would be for John to sit down with our legal counsel and go over this. I will just say, I think even with this most recent revision, the style of it, to me, is quite cumbersome. And I don't know that it needs to be that way. And that's one of the advantages I think our legal advisors can provide. So before we get to a point of looking for a vote on this draft, I would like to know that John has worked very closely with the legal advisors on this draft, and that we have their input on a final document to be considered by the board.
Well, I agree with you.
Great.
We have also a human resource.
We've come to the limit of our expertise on this.
I think
we have
so.
People that we can go to put the final polish on it and make it consistent and effective legal.
As we move into the other two items, the investigative policy and harassment and inappropriate behavior. I think to finish those up, I think we need to send them to our HR consultant and get some opinion if they follow normal HR and any new HR thought currently. But I do agree with you that it was my intention that the next step was to have our legal folks look at it. We did have some help early on. We asked specific questions as we were moving through this process, and John I passed that information on to Sean and I as we were working on the original resolutions.
So, I think I got a little confused when we were talking about that. That my impression was that the investigative policy and the harassment policy were being presented as a part of this resolution in Exhibit B.
Not only, is that only true or not? Toward Board of Directors.
Correct, yeah. Yeah,
but that policy,
Board of Directors, internal complaint procedures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That those are part of Exhibit B.
They are part, but only as it relates to Board of Directors, because
yes,
we follow different
yeah,
procedures.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about is the Board of Directors. We're
correct,
not talking about the employee handbook at this time.
Yeah.
So the employee handbook has a completely separate presentation
yes,
on those same subjects, but this can conversations confined to the Board of Directors.
Well, so, I'm fine with taking this resolution and dropping it off to our and the old resolution so they understand, like 1703 and 1801.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
they understand the history of it, what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think that that context will be important for them because you know, it makes sense to me that, you know, we try to incorporate policy towards board members in as few documents as possible. And also understanding that if we incorporate a mechanism that allows periodic updates, that only makes our job in the future easier.
Right.
And I think that that's a good approach. You know, we'll see how, if they like the way it's laid out, or if they have any suggestions about that.
Sure.
But I'll make sure that they know that our intent was essentially, I think, twofold, which is threefold. We want to add some additional information to the package of rules that apply to board members. But we also don't want to lose sight of prior resolutions and the benefit they bring, but also to create a mechanism through this exhibit process that you're trying to do, which creates maybe a more convenient way to leave the resolution as a whole intact while we just make an adjustment to an exhibit, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So it sounds like I understand the intent, and I'll make sure that is relayed to our legal counsel as well as they look it over. I think it's important for them to know what our goals are. So
I agree.
Yeah.
So the board will step back until we have the result of your conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one other really nitpicky little housekeeping thing.
Uh-oh.
About this. Because I did so much with publications in my past. I think we need to be sure that we are consistent in the use of terms. So chair of the board, chairperson occurs occasionally. We should say chair of the board as we say vice chair of the board, as we say treasurer. We don't say vice chairperson. We don't say treasurer person. So, And that's a word search when the whole thing is pretty much edited. It's just a search for to be consistent.
Consistency is really important in these.
And
the longer the document gets, the harder it is to maintain that too. So
I tried to.
Yeah, it is.
I took your suggestions and
thing.
I saw what you were thinking.
I saw that you did.
Yeah, I saw
a lot
what
of
you
them
were
got
thinking,
changed.
So I tried to change those.
In that final, what we hope might be a final version coming out of your work from this point on.
Yep.
That would be great.
I'll take the reins of it, and with some guidance, I'll get back to the board just as soon as
okay,
I can.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move on to the two new policies we were considering. That is also part of Exhibit B, but these policies are relating to the authority in general, which incorporates both employees and board members. They are written specifically to allow John to use whatever he wants from them to update our employee handbook, because that's the for employees, like the SDAO guidelines that we as board members follow. The employee handbook are the basic guidelines that our employees follow, and that's John's bailiwick. But everybody's read these, the external complaint investigative policy. When we get a complaint that comes in.
Internal complaint.
Internal, yes. Internal complaint. If someone files a complaint against us, whether it's another employee, whether it's a board member, constituent, whatever, we needed a policy to specifically track this complaint and how we were going to proceed with it, and what possible, what possible negative things could happen to an employee if an investigation showed that they were at fault. Did I state that correctly, John?
I think you did.
Okay. Did everybody get a chance to read that, and what are your thoughts?
I've got a question as far as contractors. Whenever we do a job bid or whatever, would any of that have to be inside so that, because there's interaction between the contractor and our employees.
Well, once we've decided on this policy, I think it would be important for us to make sure in our future contracts that they understand how we feel about harassment and our inappropriate behavior and how we follow this policy.
So that will be incorporated in our next.
It should. It's. Isn't that kind of commonplace now anyway, John? Or
well, yeah, you know, I wonder, though, just because you can't cover every dynamic in a single policy. And, you know, speaking of, you know, I definitely understand the inclination to try. You know, we've talked about, you know, employees and board members, which are groups that should be represented. When it comes to customers, constituents, contractors, are we doing too much to try to pull those dynamics into a policy that it's so difficult to define? We don't really have a history of anything like that. You know, for example, how do you lay out a harassment policy if we hire a contractor and he's giving one of my employees a hard time? You know, I would do an investigation, and it'd probably result in me firing the contractor, depending on the severity of the incident. But I guess I wonder, should we include these outside groups in a policy like that? And if we do, are we really addressing the different nuances that would occur as a result of those interactions with people outside of the authority?
Are you referring now to the harassment and inappropriate behavior?
Well, yeah, I just, you know, in general, just, you know, because we've talked about all the groups that could possibly be involved.
Right now I'm talking about the complaint.
The complaint procedure?
How we follow a complaint, have a rigid electronic trail of a complaint.
But is that really as necessary to document if a complaint comes against a contractor? I guess it would be from the employee's point of view, but does anybody understand
that? You would uncover that in your investigation,
yeah,
that a contractor was included. I don't think that our employee handbook can govern contractor behavior.
No.
So our purpose in this is to, how do we address a complaint?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm an employee and I have a complaint, I come to you and I complain.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
you deal with it, and
yeah.
you
I don't think, as you said very early on, I don't think it's possible for us to identify every single little, you know, piece of the alphabet that might be involved in that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a, when the issue comes up, you have the authority and here's the procedure.
Sure.
I'm thinking, for example, an employee, gets a hard time from a vendor or a contractor, and he tells you, he's the complainant. So he's complaining to you, and then this procedure allows you to document that whole situation, and then you, because it's your employee, you have you do what you have to do to protect the employee in this case.
Sure, sure. Okay.
I'd like to see, go ahead, Kathy.
In the first paragraph, when a complaint comes against an employee, et cetera, what if the employee is the manager?
If a complaint comes in from an employee about the manager?
From a constituent or from anyone.
Well, whoever takes the call has to document it.
Yes, but you know, it says that it's forwarded to the manager. So if it's about the manager, how do we forward it to the manager?
Well, we probably should forward it to me or to the vice chair.
I mean, I'm not anticipating that's going to happen, but I just think...
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Let me see.
There was language
in there. If the complaint is against the manager, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I thought that was in there at one time, but I don't see
maybe
it.
Maybe that goes through the authority's consultant.
The HR consultant.
Well,
is the employee handbook language, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Was this intended to be kind of a guide for the employee handbook, or was this attempted to be the equivalent of the employee handbook related to board members?
No, this is a overall authority policy.
Okay.
So it applies both to board members and to employees.
Okay.
And just so I'm clear,
this language is addressed toward.
This is not part of the resolution.
No, this is not part of the resolution.
We need to keep that clear.
This is strictly.
This is employee handbook.
And if we approve either or both of these, it's my intention that John, he knows the policy that we've just voted on, and he can write that policy into the handbook any way he wants to, because that's the general guidelines for employees, and that's his bailiwick and his area of expertise.
So
we're talking about this document, right? So we're...
The
internal,
procedure.
External complaint and investigative
yes.
policy, right?
Yes.
And we're talking about a complaint against an employee.
Correct.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Correct.
Okay.
My question was, and if the employee happens to be
the authority manager,
yeah. Because John isn't always going to be with us. We know that.
I wonder if we just, because we've talked about that in the past. And we talked about having that go directly to our HR consultant. Maybe we just missed putting it in here. Because we have the reference to the external complaint procedure.
It says in person or through the authority's HR consultant. It's supposed to go to the manager. And I can see your point. It could get stopped right there.
Well, if the manager gets a report or a complaint, he's not going to say, oh, whoop-de-doo, I got to...
But there's always been a... We need to rewrite this. There's always been a policy, an unwritten one. That's why we're doing this, is we're writing it down. Mm-hmm. That employees have the right to come to the chair, a vice chair, or any board member if they have a complaint about the authority manager.
I think that is covered in another part of the employee handbook, but I'm not positive. And as far as this goes,
I'm pretty sure
I think if we generally agree without, I don't feel the need for a vote, but if we generally agree with the direction in these things, what we have done in the past in terms of employee policy is to revise the handbook. And when we propose revised language in the handbook, we approve the whole handbook over again with the revised language.
Well,
so
these are policy
we're not in a position of creating a separate policy here, but we are kind of in a position of agreeing on what approach would we want to have John reflect in the employee handbook, and then let him take this language and incorporate it, possibly also in consultation with the HR consultant and maybe legal too. But hearing all the concerns you're hearing, I think that would be the next step.
Yeah, because it says in the investigated that the authority manager will determine the matter, and then what if it is him?
And I think he hears that issue, and he can address that in revising this. But it will be language that will be in added to the employee handbook in the appropriate place and all that. And what we've done in the past was we got a copy of the whole employee handbook. I think we got it electronically. Or maybe it was just certain pages where changes were proposed and how to change language. And then we could adopt the revisions to the employee handbook as a full document.
Well, and it may be necessary to separate these investigation procedures out with authority manager being one, employee to employee being another,
very possibly,
and employee to board member being a third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
does that and because
I think that makes sense.
Yes. Because if we actually separated it out that way and in plain English, you know, even if some steps were repeated three times, I think that that's the way to be able to put specific procedures based off of three very different categories of employees or people.
And
then the employee can go through the index and say, okay, here's me. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Does that sound reasonable? I think that's the only way to handle that, because there's no way we can bunch them all together and have a comprehensive, coherent type of approach. Does that seem okay?
Yes. So everybody basically agrees on the procedure. The investigative procedures is where we were going with this, and that was our basic goal in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we never had one.
Because we were going to make a resolution. Mm-hmm. So that's why we tried to get out of the resolution.
Yeah, and then it got
business.
Separated because the resolution.
So and there isn't
if
any.
Do we need to vote on an investigative policy?
I think we have consensus that on this, but I don't think we need to take a vote until it is being proposed as language for revision in the employee.
So it doesn't need to be written down. We just agree with it?
No, it needs to be written down.
Well, in the employee handbook. Yeah, I think what Ann's suggesting is once we get this transferred over to the employee handbook, then I present that, and that's something we vote on.
Then we vote on it.
Will that also go through legal?
Yeah, I
think it should.
Yes.
You know, there are
the HR consultant and legal. When we revised the employee handbook before, both of those parties have been involved.
Yeah. Yep. I think anything that has greater legal ramifications should
absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
So we'll
thank you again, though, for all the work you've done in writing it down.
Well, it was very cumbersome. But we had the basic document from SDAO, so I'm that we're past that resolution, so I'm gonna. But this basic policy, we are all in agreement how we want to proceed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Let's move on. Item B under unfinished business is a wage survey update. John.
Thank you. As the board knows, I think the board unanimously thought that a wage survey was a good idea with the intent to make sure that we are remaining competitive. I will say before I forget to mention it, I was approached by a couple of employees who were actually concerned about this, that this could potentially go the opposite way in terms of
impact of employees than I think what the intent is. I've definitely reassured them that that is not the intent. We're not looking to cut benefits. We're not looking to do any of that. In fact, it's for the employees in mind, their benefit and the authority's benefit to be able to retain and to attract talent, that this is a good idea. First thing I did was I reached out to Nanette. She very quickly said this was just not her area of expertise. So not knowing where to go, I started Googling HR consultants in the Portland area. Started with a company called Xenium HR, which is an HR consulting outfit. This is not just a single person working out of their living room. This is quite a bit of folks all working in the same field in the same office building. So I reached out, had a meeting, a Teams meeting with two representatives of that company. I had told them initially what we're looking for. They initially responded very favorably that, yeah, we can do this. This is within our wheelhouse. This is something we can do. But as I began to have the conversations with them, it quickly became apparent that their idea of how they want to do the survey and our idea of how we want the survey done are two completely different things. And my fear is I'm going to run into this time and time again with these HR consultants. They've got a standard way they do this. They look at general statistics and trending, but they take it from a very large pool. They don't. It seems like nobody wants to call up individual municipalities, individual utilities, and asked to see a copy of their job descriptions and their pay skills. When I tried to determine why they were so reluctant to do that, well, they gave me this corporate thinking version that, well, we don't want to break any antitrust laws. People that do this can sometimes be accused of price fixing. And clearly, they're thinking more about corporate America than about government America, because these are all non-factors for us because it's public record. But what I'm finding is people don't want to do the work. They want to just look at some, collection of statistics they have and just spit them out at you. And that's not going to work for us. You can't just... they have to be industry specific. It's got to be water, wastewater, utilities. It can't be mixed in with a lot of other things where operators maybe don't have certifications. You can't just go after a term like operator and report back a bunch of statistics, because you're undoubtedly including operators from a whole range of industries. So once they found out that was our goal, they quickly decided that we probably weren't a solution provider for us. I haven't had a chance to try a different consulting firm. I will try that just to see if what I suspect is true. And this is, sure, we can do a wage survey for you, but this is how they get their data. And I don't want to go through an exercise that isn't going to be representative. I don't want to go through an exercise that isn't going to be something that provides useful and valuable information to us. So, but I will make sure that I will attempt this with an HR consulting firm again. But if I run into the same approach, the only way we're going to get this done is if I do it. And interestingly enough, yesterday, I got a call from the Glenarden Beach, who wanted a copy of our pay scales because they were working on a wage survey. To which I quickly said, well, if you give me yours, I give you mine, you give me yours, right? I have, you know, but this is the type of info we need, right?
Well, that's what we did in the past. I think Michelle called up and down the coast what the scales were.
Yeah,
it seems to me that 100 years ago, Tony used to have something he produced with state data, that because it is public record.
Yeah.
And that there were like pie charts of people that made between this much money and that much money.
Yeah.
But I don't recall the details. I don't recall how it was. I was not involved in doing it. But there may be something there that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. But
potentially, yeah. And I'd like to investigate that. If you guys come across anything that might be a shortcut, please let me know, because my hope was is that we could contract this effort out. If we can't, then it's going to be up to us, up to probably largely me.
Maybe we could get a college intern in economics to do some strategic investigation for us for a...
Well, my thinking here, just bringing this whole thing up, is like what just happened, we just lost a darn good young man to Alaska, and we're not going to be able to compete with Alaska. But wages in the valley are different than they are here. Cost of living is different than it is here. So I don't want to lose someone to the valley because our wages aren't competitive. So that was my thinking in the first place.
Yeah,
but if they're going to leave, they're going to leave. If you get enticed by, hey, come up to Alaska, that's a no-brainer. We're just not going to be able to compete.
So, Jen, how much money is budgeted to pay for this survey?
Zero.
So if you were going to hire a consulting firm, what were they going to get paid?
Well, it's not unusual for us to have expenses that weren't budgeted for. We do have ways to fund things like this. And you know, the first thing I wanted to know is, can you do this? Will you do this? And then how much is it going to cost? Mm-hmm. And you know, my goal was to come back to the board with that information, not to let the board know I've hired somebody.
Right.
So, you know, I think that, you know, we can still do that, but this experience with this one firm kind of tells me what I'm likely going to expect.
So when I was getting my master's degree, I worked for the city of Roseburg doing this exact thing as a intern as part of my project. So
that's why
perhaps you might want to try contacting University of Oregon, OSU, some of these schools, and see if they have a student in economics or management or a variety of fields that might be available to do something like that and use that as a project for their degree.
Because this information is public record. It's not like we're asking somebody to use confidential information.
One of the, I can't remember, is it Clackamas or one of the community colleges has water and wastewater degree programs, right?
Clackamas.
Maybe that would be
it. Yeah, they might have somebody that is thinking about management that would be interested in doing something.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, call us OSU and start asking around. Well, you know, that's almost
that's
an overwhelming proposition for me. Calling a community college is, I think, especially with a program like
that. The head of the program.
Yeah.
But if it's done right, it's a time-consuming project. You're not going to sit down and do this in half an hour.
Nope.
And you have a lot to do already. You're a busy person. And so perhaps if you could find someone that could do that as a project where they get paid something but not a fortune, it would make it easier for you. And you could still be supervising and making sure they do things the way you need to have it done.
Yeah, well, that
paid internships are not uncommon in programs like that.
Yeah, so. I will pursue that. Will pursue that.
That's a great idea, Pat.
But, yeah, but unfortunately, I don't have much to report back to the board about in terms of success here.
We'll get there.
If you need some help, I'd be happy to help you.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I will definitely keep that in mind, and we'll keep this ball rolling. My guess is to actually get a finished product, we're months away, not weeks away at this point.
Yeah.
So
year away.
All right, thank you, John.
Question for the board before we begin. Now that we're into the new business item, do we have the ability to rearrange the order on the agenda to cater to the folks in the audience?
Sure.
I would recommend we move the emergency shed proposal to the next item.
That'd be fine.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
That'd be item B, STCEVC.
Yeah, and I'll preface this. I'd like to hear from members of the organization. The South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteer Corps, and it only took me 3 months to say that without messing it up, approached us with a proposal. This is an organization that deals with emergency preparedness. I think with a large focus toward a Cascadia subduction zone event, although that's not the only focus. And one of the things that they do is they at their own expense, erect emergency supply sheds in strategic locations along the coast that contain a variety of emergency equipment, whether it's first aid, food, water, blankets, things of that nature. And they've approached us with two of our locations in mind for potential sites for these emergency sheds. One of them is our 100K reservoir. The other one is our 300K reservoir. And the reason that these make the most sense, at least in terms of the property that PCJ owns, is that, number one, they're out of the tsunami inundation zone. Number two, they're in areas of town where we have quite a few residents, or they're in areas where of town where there's a lot of homes nearby, which means that these are close to people that might need this equipment. They don't have to travel far to get to it. And I just wanted to say for the board, I have been working with our insurance company on this concept. I have been working with our legal counsel on this concept. Our insurance company is fine with it as long as we are indemnified. Our insurance agent said not only does she have people like us as clients, but I think that she's been involved with some of your efforts as well. So I don't really, just for the benefit of the board, I don't see a lot of issue from an insurance standpoint, especially if you guys can name us as co-insured. And I don't think our insurance company has any issues with that either. Our legal counsel is concerned about third-party liabilities, meaning, once the sheds are built and in place, how are people insured that might come and go? Maybe they're checking on the shed, or maybe they're resupplying the shed. It was those third-party liabilities that our legal counsel was primarily concerned about. You know, he gave another example. You know, what if somebody cuts our fence and pilfers one of these? Well, what about damages to our property? Or, you know, are we covered with all that? Our insurance agent, believes we are. But I will say that I did not answer every question about this in terms of legal liability risk that I'd like to. But I will say in general that this is an effort that I support. I do believe that if there is one extracurricular activity that the authority should take a leadership role in, it is community safety and emergency preparedness. And I believe, based on what I know about the potential earthquake and tsunami that is already overdue, is that there's going to be a lot of people that are homeless. And we're going to be cut off from the rest of the world for quite some time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're talking about our friends, our neighbors. And I do think that the efforts of this organization is going to save lives. And therefore, as long as we've got the footprint, I know we have at the 100K, the 300K is a little more challenging. And as long as we have the blessing of our insurance agent and our legal counsel, I would urge the board to support this effort. Now, I think I'm 90% of the way there with covering those bases, and I think we can get the rest of the way there. But you know, you might have some ideas and some thoughts, you know, about some of those issues, some of those liability issues, some of those security issues. So Stephanie, if you've got something you'd like to say to the board, or and if you'd be willing to answer some questions, that
sure.
would be great.
I'd be happy to answer some questions, and I also updated the overview. I wrote it originally a couple of months ago for John, so I've just put in a little bit more detail. Dave Sears is the president of the SDC-EDC, and it took me months to be able to do that. SDC-EDC.
That is, yeah.
Without stuttering
yeah.
over it.
Yeah.
There are our plan, our goal for 2024 has been to have in place 7 sheds. We're thinking with, if we get approval for the 2 in Pacific City, we'll actually have a total of 8, which is more than what we had planned for, in part because the Pacific Sea Watch Homeowners Association has agreed to fund a supply cache, and it won't be a shed, but it'll be supplies that are stored in their clubhouse, and they're going to fund that. Last year, there was already a shed put in place, or prior to 2024, there was a shed put in place on Hillcrest in Neskowin, and that's up near the water tower. The 2 sheds in Neskowin are both on water district land, as I understand it, in Neskowin. Yeah, correct me where I
okay,
go straight here. So Dave and some other volunteers have just completed a shed down on South Beach, which is a critical area for the people on that side of Neskowin to go to. Sahali South has taken an active role and are well on their way to having a shed built on private property. There's an owner there that has agreed to have a shed on their personal property, which is a little bit unusual, but we also have that in Tierra del Mar, including on Dave's property. So we have 2 sheds also in Tierra del Mar. One is on Dave Sears' property. It's the one that we call the ICF on the south end of Tierra del Mar. There's one in the center. And these are all on the east side of the road up on the hill there. There's another one on private property there. That one is actually going to be a shipping container. And then State Parks, we just got approval on Friday that they're going to allow us to have a supply cache on their property on the north end of Tierra del Mar. So those will probably be barrels, I believe.
Small, yeah.
Basically, you know, pet food containers, actually. There's going to be discreetly located in the woods up there, out of sight, out of mind, because we could not get any approval to build a shed on north end of Tierra del Mar. And that those would be for a 24-hour, to keep them alive for 24 hours. Then the people would be moving south, this terminal would have two sheds in that location. And I'm just trying to figure out how to... what we would work with, and so that's what that turned out to be, but yeah.
So the sheds are all different shapes and sizes. There's no consistent footprint. So I know one of your concerns, John, was making it fit up on, is that the larger water tower?
Well, it's the larger water tower, but it's the smaller footprint.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could make it whatever shape would fit. And part of our reasoning for why PCJ WSA land, it's really the only pseudo public land in Pacific City without it being in a super public place where everybody has access to it. So we do want them to be secure. Don't want a problem with break-ins and so on. So they'll be kind of benign looking, and there won't be signage on them or anything announcing what they are. They're just a supply shed that volunteers in the local community will know is there. You'll know it's there, we'll know it's there, the fire district, fire department will know it's there. And in an emergency, the supplies will be there if needed.
I had a question. In a tragic tsunami event, and these sheds, I'm assuming, are going to be locked up, how are they going to be accessed if whoever has the keys is not around?
Good question. I'm going to answer. It depends on the location. It depends upon the location. You don't want just one individual with one key, obviously, correct? So you need to have a group of people. And we fully appreciate, we understand this is on your property, you have your facilities there. So obviously you'll be very concerned about who has a key to it. But you, ideally, the idea would be a group of people that have the key to it, that have access to the note, it's there. Again, it's not like a public knowledge, we have these supplies at this location, we have the assembly site, this is where you're going to go to be safe. So the question would really depend upon the community. And of course, a big factor with you people, if you want to allow us to put this shed there, who do you feel comfortable having the key to? Ideally, it'd be people in the neighborhood, because we may not be able to get to the shed. You need to have someone that lives down the street or, they can actually walk. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, but it also brings up a liability concern.
Access to the property.
Yeah, well, those are probably some of the challenges that you guys confront all the time.
We've been talking about that particular topic, because we also don't want to have a ring of keys, right? Or that the fire department has, or so we've been talking about more of a, like I believe you have like a universal key system. I know the fire department does, where they have a key that would open the sheds. Honestly, in a true disaster, when these are being accessed, when we've had a catastrophic earthquake and tsunami and people are evacuating this location right here and going up to one of those rallying points, they will be broken into.
They'll chew through it.
Yeah. I mean, and at that point, if somebody has to cut through our fence, do we really care?
No.
Not at that point.
Because, there may be a few other instances they may be accessed, maybe it's a fire, some kind of horrific, like the Otis fire or something. But other than an earthquake or that kind of a fire, I can't imagine where we wouldn't be calling John to say, hey, we need access to the shed. When is a good time for us to go up there? he sends, he meets us there, or meets one of his staff there, and then we go in and we do the maintenance that we need to do, and we replace the food for this fresh stuff or whatever needs to happen.
Have you guys thought about a trailer instead of a shed?
Well, we do have a trailer over at the elementary school.
A trailer instead of a shed. They're pulled, you know, being able to pull it wherever it's needed, required. And also padlocks that are code numbers instead of keys.
Right. My concern is if we're not don't have a tsunami, and how many people have keys to our property? I don't have a key to our property. Yeah,
that would be we're not talking about giving people keys to the gate.
Yeah, they are.
No, we don't want a key to the gate.
Yeah.
That's not what we're asking for. So I can't imagine.
It all has to be what you guys are comfortable with. You know, the thing is, the ideal we want to get to is people have access to it. Not the general public, the key people in the community responsible have access to it.
Yeah. Does the fire department have a key to your gate?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
So, yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think the concept is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the idea, sure. But I'm just thinking about how many people have keys to our gate.
I'm relieved to hear you say, because I don't know if I read it or just made it up in my head, that you would have access to the gate all the time.
I guess in my mind, that's not how I've been viewing it. I've been viewing that we would have key people like Chris Dennis, who lives up in PC Heights, as an example. He is a CERT, which is a Citizen Emergency Response Team volunteer. Anyway, he's been one of the people who's been putting up the signs all over town on where to go. Anyway, he's a person who I would think we would give access to the shed.
But not the gate into the property.
I haven't been thinking that we would have access to the gates. I think that we would have to get that from the water district, because I understand and can respect the concern that you would have for allowing public access citizens, yeah. This Chris Dennis guy, access to your water tank.
Because the reality is going to be that if something does happen, doesn't make any difference who does or doesn't have a key to get in.
Oh, I got you.
They're gonna cut whatever they need to cut.
It's not gonna take long.
Taking out those reservoirs immediately if something happens, if at all possible.
Well, and so imagine
unlock the gate.
Yeah, and imagine it though, at the earthquake happening at 2:00 on a Saturday morning. None of us is gonna be there. But, you know, I think probably the basic concept is in a true, you know, event like that, people will get in there. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, I want them to get in there. To be honest with you, we aren't going to have much infrastructure left anyway. Mm-hmm. That reservoir may not be standing. And in fact, hopefully your supply shed won't be washed away once those reservoirs crumble.
We will build it on the upper.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because, I mean, these are, you know, I mean, in a 9.2 earthquake, these are reservoirs that were built in the 1970s out of pre-stressed concrete. And
yeah, they're very likely not going to be there.
They're not going
to
be there.
What you need to think about is the tank in Nesquewin on Hillcrest doesn't have a fence around it. And the shed is just kind of tucked behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that occurred to me while I was thinking about this was, because we had talked earlier, and you guys probably aren't even aware, we had a idea floated to us to put a cell tower on some of our property. And one of our big concerns was security of water sewer infrastructure, because. But in reading this, it occurred to me that maybe a sort of inset fence could be installed on the property, and the shed could be in a little tiny fenced-in area of its own.
With its own gate?
Mm-hmm. With its own gate, And then you would have access to it from somebody that lives in the neighborhood would have a key to that other gate, but not to the water tower. So that was something I thought you might consider.
Yeah, it's a trade-off with it's doubly protected if it's inside our gate. So kind of, I mean, it's doubly protected against vandalism, right? If it's inside our gate, there's two levels that they have to go through to get at it.
Well, I was thinking of a second exterior gate, but just like say it's a square, we build another little fence inside the square and install a gate over here that's inside that little rectangle for the shed.
That seems reasonable.
And then we have our own entrance for security of water stuff.
And for something like that, you wouldn't even need us to maintain it.
Exactly. Then you could come and go to maintain it. Because you have the key to it.
Should it be on the outside of your fence? I'm not familiar with the location.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure what the property lines are. I've always assumed they were the footprint of the fence. But
to put a little indentation seems reasonable. I don't know, but
that could be explored.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had that idea. So I don't think that's a bad idea necessarily. We have a officer's meeting tomorrow, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, that way you have access to
24/7. Inside our fence, or we've got the footprint to put a little alcove outside the fence.
Other than
still on our property, still with all the insurance cooperation and legal stuff covered and all that.
Other than it costs you just a little bit more money because now we have to buy a fence. I don't see any negatives in it, really.
It wouldn't be a big fence.
It wouldn't, right. I mean, it'd have to be the same height with the same protection on top and all that business, but...
Sure. Now, you guys can have electricity, heat, utilities?
No.
None of that.
So
in the barrels or tubs or the things that you have put up so far, has there been any vandalism?
I'm not aware of it. We work closely with Kate Mears. Kate Mears has come on. They kind of pioneered the shed concept. 50 people for 3 weeks. They came up with that number. Their sheds are relative inside their community. They're discreet. You know, they look kind of nice. They blend in. They're on the right of ways, the county right of ways, by chance. And they just have a hiding key. I'm not aware of any.
The county let you put them on county right of way?
In Kate Mears, they did. Yeah.
That increases the footprint on the lot. Very possibly for this purpose, we might be able to have a little more room on our lot, depending on where the fence is.
That's what they told me, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the answer to the question is I'm not aware of any vandalism on that. And Randy Thorpe is our director of Tillamook County Emergency Management. And we were talking about different locations and stuff, and he says he doesn't care about vandals, he doesn't care about that. Because if it does happen, they'll get it taken care of. But the idea is we just got to get these supplies in. We got to get this stuff into the county. I mean, if it's behind a lock gate, we got it there, fantastic, it's there. We want to get supplies in South Tillamook County.
Yeah.
That's where we want to go.
So, you know, and this has the potential of affecting every one of us, our neighbors, our friends, our children.
Absolutely.
People who we care about in a very, very direct way. And, the water department doesn't always have the very best reputation in Pacific City. You all know we get a lot of complaints. And maybe this is a way where we can help build some community relations, some good feelings.
I'm not hearing anybody express any negative comments to it. I think it's a matter of how do we make it work.
They used to grant money for reservoirs. They've gotten grant money for blankets. They get it through the Oregon surplus. They're supposed to be cleaning supplies. Bleach, brooms, shovels, and stuff like that was in the past. I don't know if they're still doing that.
When this concept has been around for some time. When Sheriff Long was around, I had asked him about the emergency preparedness and what the sheriff's department was doing, and
He said he had a large facility, a pretty large facility out in, that'd be northeast Tillamook County, out by the camp they have, the other prison or work camp or
South
whatever.
Fork.
He said he had a large facility there for storage. And so it's been around for a while. I think it's a great concept. As long as we figure out the liability, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do it.
I fully support it. Yeah, and I think John can work out all those little kinks.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, security, liability.
Well, and I worked really hard to be able to get all that nailed down ahead of this meeting, and I was not able to just because of trouble getting hold of our insurance agent and playing phone tag with our legal counsel. But I think very soon that I will be able to come to the board with both our legal counsel's blessing and our insurance company's blessing. I think our insurance company is already on board, to be honest. I just want to wear down our legal counsel a little bit more, although they are asking good questions.
Yeah.
And so
that's their job.
That's their job. That's what we want them to do.
Exactly.
So my hope was that I would have been able to get to the summit of that hill in time for this meeting and potentially alleviate any lingering concerns the board members may have about this tonight. I was not able to do that, but I think we're very close. And with, you know, if I really get any pushback, you know, that is detailed, I'll come to you and let you know what that is and see what we can maybe work out to. Yeah. Because the thing about this is where there's a will, there's a way. We want to take our legal counsel's advice at all times, but if they put up an objection, I think we can work around it with just, you know, a little bit of creativity and a little bit of give and take.
We'll get them to yes.
And so, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that we'll be in a position to give you guys an answer about this very soon. It just won't be at tonight's board meeting because we still have a little bit more just to check out.
David, but, Stephanie, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, we really appreciate your time and being coming here again.
Thanks
really
for all your work on all
sure,
of our
yeah, time. Thanks for all your work.
Yeah, and but I'll be in touch. I'll be in so touch nice. With you guys. Yeah.
Thanks for your patience,
too. Thanks for putting up with our meeting.
It was riveting, I'm sure. Right?
All right. Let's move back then to item number A under new business, the BLM property trail closure. What can you tell us, John?
Well, so we closed the trail at the advice of our legal insurance company in regard to the recreational immunity issue. My understanding is that the Oregon legislature has created a bill to create a temporary fix for that. I believe
it sunsets, though, I understand.
Yeah, it sunsets in 2026, and the governor has signed it. Mm-hmm. So the natural inclination would be, okay, well, let's take down our signs. However, I think in the process of researching this issue when we decided to put the trail closure signs up, we have gotten feedback from our insurance agent that indicates if we have a contractual obligation, whether implied or whether specific, that requires us in this case to maintain those trails and we are failing to do so, recreational immunity or not, we may have liability issues. And I for a week I tried to get a hold of our agent to talk about this particular issue. But what I can tell you is this, if you guys will bear with me for just one second, it was only a sentence or two, and I'll read what our agent has said. So this section here, on her initial response, says, on a separate note, I also highlighted the exclusion on page 23 of our policy, which states the following: any liability for damages which the participant is obligated to pay resulting from breach of any written or oral contract, whether express or implied, other than an employment contract. And she goes on to say, I just wanted to point this out in light of the conversation we had yesterday regarding the requirements under this contract with the BLM. So then she says this is something that we need to consider and take seriously. So what I can't say for sure is if our agreement with BLM specifically requires us to maintain the trail. However, our agreement with BLM requires us to create trails. And by doing so, I think the implication is we're supposed to also maintain said trails. So if we have not done that for whatever reason, whether it be the unavailability of man hours, to use an antiquated term, or financing issues, or even the limitations that we may find ourselves in as a government entity as to how we could legally pay for such a venture. These are all, you know, regardless of all those issues, this could still be a liability for us if we are unable to find a way to maintain those trails. And also, I want to point out, how do you define trail maintenance? Is just going up there once a year? You know, I mean, I think the general consensus is that you make sure that the trails are as safe as possible and as groomed as possible for all those that might use them. So, with that in mind, and, you know, certainly glad to get any volunteer help we might need to do that, I wonder if it's prudent to reopen those trails until we find a solution for this issue, regardless of the fact that the governor just signed this bill.
What kind of shape are the trails in? I've never been up there. Are they in disrepair, or are they dangerous? Overgrown with?
Well, I think that's kind of a subjective or an objective question. I think that if there is, you know, if the trails have eroded to the point where they're beginning to slough off the bank and the trail has been narrowed, I think if the erosion has taken place to where tree roots are now growing over the trail and could be trip hazards, I think, you know, these are the types of issues that we would want to look for and remedy in an effort to keep these trails as safe as possible.
You walk up there.
So I do walk up there. You know, and my walking group walks up there, and there's people walking up there every day, sign or no sign.
Yep.
So the two things is if a tree falls down, and if there's a storm, the wind, whatever, frequently there's trees across the trail. Sometimes you can just move them, sometimes you need to cut them. My husband has gone up there more than once with a saw and cut them off the trail. That part's pretty easy. The bigger one is roots. I'm not an expert, but I don't think that it's sloughing off. I don't think that's a problem. But there are tree roots that continue to come up, and they have the potential for people to trip on them. And so it's not a horrible project, but, you know, they can go up. It's easy to cut them out. You just need to go up with proper tools and cut them out of the way. I don't know about the liability, but I think if you wanted to have a work party and you did some advertising, there's people in this community that are interested in hiking, interested in walking and trails, that would come and help do some maintenance on it at no cost to us. The only cost maybe would be someone who is qualified to supervise, because we don't want someone that's going to, you know, let people do whatever they want, but that can supervise and make sure that they're doing a quality job.
And haul away stuff. That's yeah, kind of, because then, you have to clean up after that.
Yeah, and then haul it away.
At least.
So, you know, sooner or later, either we need to get out of this contract, or we need to do something. We need to just face that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what was the proposal from Rosenhaus that was, that Amanda was...
Just now? Tonight?
There was some discussion about Rosenhaus had walked the property and had a price in mind.
Yeah, they came up with a ballpark cost estimate based off of Rosenhaus' evaluation of the trail and their evaluation of what they felt needed to be done. I think it was about $6,000, but that included some maintenance up at the bench area too.
Yeah, which.
Which was
if you're going to do
the
trail, you might as well do that too.
Yeah,
right?
You know, if this trail is important to the community, if we had, you know, volunteers, that's the best way to do it. When this agreement was first entered into, there were organizations that that were willing and expressed a willing to be a partner in this.
Right.
Those organizations either never came to be or they've disbanded.
Right.
And so here we are left with kind of with this all on us at this point in time, unless we can garner some real volunteer support for this, because, you know, we also have to think about, you know, sure, we could probably hire somebody to do it, but I don't know if we can legally spend our money on stuff like that. You know, the only
dollars that we have with the BLM.
Yes.
So, sorry. In the maintenance of that contract, it would seem, I don't know where it would be, but it's
can we use water and sewer STC dollars to maintain a trail? These are unanswered questions I have.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So what were they thinking when they originally went into this contract, that they were going to have these organizations do everything?
Pretty much. There was also talk at the time about a move to create a recreation district here locally and other types of things that would help us with the trail management. Now, this is separate from the public work stuff we committed to. We're only talking about the recreation side of the contract now, which is the trail system. By the way, we have one trail. We're supposed to have two. Who's going to create that second trail if we want to comply with our agreement with BLM? And then we have two trails to maintain instead of just one. So, and on top of that, invasive species control throughout the entire property. I mean, if we don't have volunteers to help us with this, I don't see how it gets done.
What about as far as the insurance part of tree falling and that such, isn't that considered the act of God?
But if it's across the trail, you're going to have to use an act of man to reopen the trail.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if they fall on somebody that's walking through there.
Well, it's hard to, you know, I think the most likely scenario is somebody's going to break an ankle.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to...
Wrist.
Yeah, and you know, this is why... you know, you've got organizations like Torta now, mm-hmm. who I think evolved out of PC Pathways, but this is a mountain bike enthusiast organization, and if you want to allow mountain bikes on the trail along with families hiking with their small children, I think that's dangerous, personally.
And I don't know that our contract with BLM allows that, because I know it expressly excludes horseback riding.
It does.
And so there were exclusions in that contract, and I don't know what they
are. So what's the benefit of us having that property, the Wells?
It's a
Well, the wells.
The wells.
But nobody's...
But also, it's part of the community and...
Yeah, I think there was some when this was entered in green, too, I think this was a benefit for the community that we were supposed to be a group effort, not just PCJ. And you know, it just never came to be. And, you know, the wells, they're not... The wells, we're always going to have the wells. We had the wells before this agreement. Nobody's going to take the wells away from us.
Right.
The wells is not the reason for having this agreement. I think it was just to promote, a benefit for the community as well as to give us some additional property to grow our public works infrastructure. And... we've talked we've talked some about another public meeting for, you know, BLM, to talk about the BLM property. I think that's a good idea, but I think it's most important for the board members to understand our obligations there.
I think it might be premature.
Unless we get volunteer help and or donations, then public perception or our public opinion isn't going to change our reality.
Yeah.
And so this is a bit of a quagmire that we just got to figure out how to deal with. I don't think it's enough to just say enter, okay, trail open, but enter at your own risk. You know, it's not going to be that simple. It's not going to be that simple.
Well, I've heard from people who have walked it and who walk it regularly, and they're, because I've asked them their opinion based on this ruling on liability, nobody that I talked to thought the trail was in bad shape. They do a lot of walking in a lot of places, and they don't think it's, you know, in bad shape at all. I think that there is the issue with tree limbs and trees falling down. That needs to be taken care of. But I know that your husband's not the only one who goes up there with a chainsaw, so that seems to happen fairly regularly. And, you know, you go up to any of the trails.
State parks.
Yeah,
Cascade
I mean, there's tree roots in all of those trails.
Yeah, there are.
Yep. I mean, I don't think we're in a unique situation with tree roots in the middle of a trail. Trees falling over the trail is one thing. So, you know, my feeling is spend a little bit of money to make sure that it's safe. You know, I don't know that we need to spend the $6,000 on bros and hoes, but spend a little bit of money to make sure it's not sloughing off, and buy us some time to figure out what we want to do with the bigger picture
the BLM land. Do you think we need to have a budget line item for that?
Well, I was just going through the budget to see if there was anything that we could...
Ground maintenance?
Yeah, or I mean, even if we had a public relations line item, you know, I mean, we're buying some community goodwill by doing this. I don't know if you could put it into that. I do think you have a valid point about whether or not we can... I don't think we can spend SDC or CIC money on it, but
no.
Just in our...
Not
our,
by law, we can.
Our general
maintenance.
Budget...
General maintenance funds.
You know, do we have a community relations or public relations line item in the budget?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, me neither.
Well, we have... we pay for... the landscaping around our main building.
That's ground maintenance.
Ground maintenance.
Ground maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to increase that enough for this coming budget, increase that enough to incorporate some kind of, you know, help there with these trails. Not build one, but just the maintenance. As far as building a new one, I think that needs to come from public support.
Well, we have money that goes out for Horn Creek, too. That's the riparian project for the trees and that.
But the only way I can see it is to budget for it this year. If we're going to do something.
And maybe we can take it out of our general operating budget. I know we can't use SDCs for it, so That might help to solve our trail problem. It doesn't begin to...
Maybe you and Rochelle could find a line item that...
Or contract services.
Contract services.
I think it's just you called it what? It was what? Ground maintenance.
Ground maintenance.
That incorporates Horn Creek, incorporates our main building and
Beaver. The Beaver property.
Oh, yeah, we got the Beaver property. So that also would mean that we could just add the BLM because we're responsible for it, but not. I wouldn't be taking $6,000 either.
Yeah, well, I
think... It would be nice if we could somehow have volunteer efforts involved, but then do we designate somebody to coordinate the volunteer activities?
Yes.
Or do we ask volunteers to come to the office and sign in when they're going to be on the trail doing something? Or, I mean, there are all kinds of different ways we can look at this.
Well, and how do we feel about people wielding chainsaws on the property?
Again, what's our liability when somebody's...
I wouldn't endorse it. But,
I mean, it's not one of those things...
I'm not going to say no.
You can say, well, we take responsibility if we say yes.
Yeah. You're on accord. As a volunteer, that they're doing it as...
Well, right now, our signs protect us somewhat.
Well,
I agree we're not at the point where we can change the signs.
I don't think so either. I don't think
and
so
And that was
either.
The bottom line of the whole discussion.
It really was.
Let's keep working on it because we all want to be in the same place.
Well, and we want to reopen those trails.
Exactly.
You know, that was probably one of the real attractive things about this whole arrangement to the community.
Yeah.
And so, let's keep it where it's at for now, but let's, if we can generate some volunteer help, if we can find some budget dollars and find a way to where these expenditures will pass the muster of our auditors, then I think we can probably find a solution, at least on the trail side of things.
Because I think... You know, if you had a work day, a work weekend, a work Saturday, you advertised it and you got some volunteers there, maybe we would need to have a little bit of money to provide some tools in case people don't have tools.
Or maybe even some refreshments.
Or refreshments or something for hauling stuff away. Mm-hmm. And do some good public relations and advertising to get people there.
Yeah.
You know, unless it conflicts with some other big event, I think you'll get some people there that are willing to help out.
Well, and maybe me and Tim can partner on something in the paper to where we can, you know, we could let people know about this need.
And then if we can get it spiffed up a little bit, you know, it doesn't mean that we're going to start over and get every little tiny thing, but you get it spiffed up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then periodically you have someone that can go there and check it. So when a tree gets blown over or there's a branch that's hitting people, whatever, they can periodically take care of things. They don't have to be doing it every week or whatever.
Yeah, once a quarter or something.
But maybe once a quarter.
Okay.
Well, how's the trash on?
There isn't very much trash there. I seldom see trash because the people that walk that trail just aren't the type of people that throw their trash.
And if somebody were to do that, there's a lot of people that would see it and pick it up.
Yeah. Well, it's like the horse trails. The horse people, they cut the trees and they do stuff themselves. So.
And I don't know if the sheriff's office has the workforce group
the
jail? Back in action.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
They discontinued that for quite a while due to staffing because that takes close supervision. But they were out at the Cape doing something not too terribly long ago.
Well, what about community service?
It might be well worth contacting the sheriff because they have equipment, as far as I know, maintenance stuff.
The community service that you have, the judge passes down, don't they go out and do stuff like that?
I could make an inquiry in regards to that, too.
Be a great Earth Day organization. It's a little too soon for this year, but
Litter
you know,
Day.
Have an Earth Day
The sheriff just have a really good team, and they had equipment to use. And South Fork Work Camp, they send people out to do projects like this, too.
Well, I'll make some calls.
And then I know they have equipment, because I went up there and toured it one time. They've got shops and big rigs. And
well, they do fire.
Yeah. I'll make some calls. I think the long-term future of it's going to depend on volunteers.
Yeah,
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Good conversation. Thanks.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, last item, ladies and gentlemen, is our budget calendar. And I only have one comment. It looks pretty straightforward, just like every year. But when we first published that we're going to have a budget committee meeting, that'd be May 7th, as it's stated here. I'd like to also, I've mentioned this to John, but all the budget papers that are presented to the board members, including, you know, the spreadsheet, the projects we're planning for the year, the identification of our six different accounts, those basic budget papers, I'd like to see those published, all of that published on our website so that the public knows what we're looking at.
So the proposed budget.
The proposed budget, but the budget papers that go along with it, explaining how it works, the spreadsheet, and what projects we're going to do, I think is a way to maintain better transparency than we have in the past. And, you know, if we're going to buy a new truck or we're going to buy a piece of machinery and some client out there think that that's a little too spendy, well, they need to keep our feet to the fire to talk about, you know, what we're spending money on. It's the public's money, so let's make sure they know what we're spending on.
That's why we have a budget hearing, where people can come and ask questions.
A lot of people don't do that, but...
Exactly, but you make the information available.
Yes, that's all I want to say.
Well, down at the library, because I've seen people go through it down there.
Yeah, good. Good place.
And I'd still like to see meetings posted at the library for our board meetings, because we used to do that.
That's not kind of up to them. If they'll do it, cool. But yeah, I would like, that's the only thing I was thinking. May 7th looks like the time to do it.
So do we have a copy of this?
I think
in your packet.
Well, it's in the packet, and my understanding was Rochelle sent an early copy to everybody, too.
I have it
separate
here.
Right. Here it is. Here you go.
I think it was the very last sheet in the board packet.
Yeah.
Because I went through my whole packet. Well, never mind. I have it now, so I'm fine.
May 21st is the budget committee meeting.
Correct.
So.
That's why I figured May 7th. That gives you a person 2 weeks to look at everything and understand it.
Oh, gee, Sean, you're going to miss out.
Well, it can't be posted until he's got it ready. So.
Yeah, well, yes.
When he gets it ready and distributes it to the board. Maybe he can post it on the website.
Yeah, well, that will be about, because you guys will get it as soon as I get it, or as soon as we put it together, I'm sure, so.
Well, I'd like to see it published in the website as soon as possible.
Yeah, we will do that. I also want to say that I've gotten a hold of 4 out of 5 of our budget committee members. 4 out of 5 have committed to... Although one of them said that he'd have to attend remotely, but I thought that would be okay.
Sure.
The one person I've got a hold of is Mr. Height, and I keep trying to call
him.
You have
not gotten
a hold of him? I have not been able to get a hold of
him. I see him fairly often. I'll talk to him.
If you talk to him.
In fact, I did talk to him a week or 10 days ago, and he said, hey, the budget committee's coming up again.
Yeah, I ran into him too.
All right, well, I take that as a yes.
I know it's in his head.
I think he's on board. I ran
into him. He's planning to be there, but.
Yeah.
Next time I see him, I'll tell him to be sure and reach out to you. And tell
him. Yeah, I've tried several times. I got 2 numbers to reach him, and I haven't been able to reach him.
Okay.
So, but I think that's just a formality. But, yeah, if you guys could twist his arm for me, I think that would be great.
He's in. I'm almost positive from comments he's made.
Good. Yeah. Well, that was really all for this. I think we just wanted to see if anybody had any thoughts, any comments, anything related to the calendar that they wanted to talk about. Tom, I got your comments. Anybody see any conflicts with any of these dates in terms of, well, you're not answering.
That's fine.
All right.
I have to check my
calendar. It's a commitment. We do it every year.
Yes. Well, that was, yeah, that was, I didn't expect to have a long conversation about this calendar, but just wanted to give people an opportunity to make comment if they wanted to, so.
Okay, that moves us to guest questions and comments. You have a comment, Tim?
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
On the BLM, just to give anyone, I can follow up with John, but following up on Sean's comments, you know, I'm just curious why the need is felt to have it at a higher standard than any other trail around 50 miles. I mean, like Sean.
Did you say, is that directed at me or Sean?
Anyone, that is why I'm asking now, because Sean spoke to it.
I can say that I don't feel that we have to maintain it to a higher standard. We just have to document the fact it gets periodic maintenance.
Yeah.
And that's really the issue.
Yeah.
As long as we can say, look, you know, we do maintain the trail. This is what we've done in the last year. So I think, yeah, I think.
You were commenting that it was dangerous.
The trail?
I haven't been on it.
No, it's not dangerous. It just needs some routine upkeep.
When you talk about roots, I mean, there's another perspective from some people with, you know, a technical trail can be desirable to certain people.
Yeah.
But if you look out the window, there's that little trail that goes up the hill.
Deer
there's
trail.
Roots in that. I can see there's a root right there at the top. You know, that if people aren't paying attention, they're going to trip on it. And so you need to just use good common sense and do the best you can to keep it as safe as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have a higher standard for maintenance than any other public entity.
You got to remember, this whole thing started in Newport when someone took a little trail.
Have you been on Whale 967?
Oh, yes. I get it.
Yeah.
Big lookout.
Yeah.
Cascade Forest Trail. I mean, I'm on all the time, but and there's, big trees
Do you think it would be behoove us to maybe put a contact person if they find something on the sign? If you know, you find something damaged or...
Any questions, please contact PCJWSA's main office. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, put that on the sign.
The general concern was that from our insurance company.
Exactly.
You know, that their concern was that we could face difficulties in liability if we're not maintaining the trail. I think that was...
And if we're required to do so.
Issue, I'd say much bigger obstacles from one
Right, right.
And I don't think they're setting a standard for how we maintain it, but we need to maintain it at some level.
And I think the main key word here is documented... we are maintaining.
Yeah, I mean, this.
We got to have a paper.
We have a schedule. We have a budget item we spent. We have something to prove we did some maintenance.
Yeah. As long as we do that, then recreational immunity does apply to us.
Yeah. So it's not as complicated as it kind of becomes in the conversation.
No, it's really not. And I think if we can just demonstrate some honest effort, maybe even one day a year, I think we can say that we've checked that box, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, the conversation, I don't know if you remember with Tony, some of the stuff was unrealistic of what they, with the proposal of things that they wanted done.
Well, I think back in the days when there were all the volunteer groups that were going to do it all.
Right.
And it may or may not have been unrealistic then, but it is now.
And they had some grants, and they had some money.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, well, let's we've talked it out. So
okay.
Yeah, does that answer your question? I don't want to make it sound like that it's got to be immaculate. It's just... It's we have to document some effort.
But we do something.
And currently, we can't do that.
It sounded like when you were talking about insurance and you're talking about any potential tripping, I mean, to me that sounds like a higher standard. Someone who trail runs quite a bit.
That wasn't the intent.
Doesn't kind of compare it.
Sure. Well, we want to maintain the nature experience, so yeah. You know, we're not going to pave it, you know. I think it's just documenting that we're doing our due diligence more than anything. So,
thank you for your comments, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have anything to say myself other than. Please give Mr. Kahn our very best wishes.
Yep.
I think I speak for the board in that. He's been a great employee, and we're going to miss him, and he's welcome back.
Yeah, well, he leaves us on good terms, and we wish him well.
I have a couple of things. I'll be very quick. I don't know if any of you have read your most recent edition of the News and Risk Management Review from SDAO. Winter 2024. Two things just as a comment and for future consideration. On page 10, there is an article about the public meetings law update, and I'll just read this. Training, House Bill 2805 added a new mandatory training requirement for every member of a governing body of a public body with total expenditures of $1 million or more per fiscal year. So that would apply to us. Right.
Mandatory training in what?
Public meeting law.
Oh.
These governing body members must receive public meetings law training at least once during their term of office. So that's out there. It's a requirement. It's ramping up because it's a new bill. And SDAO has been approved or is in consideration to be approved for doing those trainings. Or the state will do them too. So it's just something I think should be on our radar, maybe a group training session online or have somebody come out from SDAO.
And then, this would be for board members, Carol?
For board members. And then secondly, on the next page, page 11, there's an article called Switching to a Gov Domain. And this is something that those of you that work with the county very much realize they have already done, they've just done recently. Mm-hmm. So now it's TillamookCounty.gov for their websites and their email addresses. And in this article it says that these .gov web domains are only available to U.S.-based government organizations, and using it signals trust and credibility, and it strengthens cybersecurity. So I don't know all the inner details of that. I don't know how it strengthens cybersecurity.
Are they forcing us to do that, or are they suggesting?
They're strongly suggesting it for the protection of our data and that kind of stuff. So those are two things that are kind of down the road. I just wanted to get them on the radar.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else have a comment?
Yeah, I do. Are we still looking for water leaks? Are we still having issues?
I had a big water leak in my house a couple days ago.
But it was on your side of the meter, right?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
That's not the kind he's talking about.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we are as we can. It seems like we are falling into an average of about 15%, give or take, which is a heck of a lot better than the 35% we were before. So we have made good grounds there. Our goal is to proactively, not every day, but at least once a year, try to cover as much of our distribution system as we can, just proactively looking for leaks. There's still something that explains that 15%, but I just want to point out it could be water meters that aren't quite reading accuracy can chips in a few percent, and other factors chip in. So it's something that we are still doing, but I can tell you that we're doing it more on an annual preventative maintenance basis right now than we are on any reaction to any serious problem right now. So it's not a corrective action thing at this point for us. It's a preventative thing. And we certainly hope that if we find those miscellaneous little leaks that are undoubtedly still in our system out there.
The last SDO AO meeting I attended at conference in Seaside here a couple of months ago, SDAO represents a lot of small water companies.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking about people with 10 or 15 hookups. And the water loss due to water leaks was a major topic. But, well, how do we do that, you know, with small companies? How do we... What's a norm? And in the room there was about 40 people, and the average percentage was, the consensus was 15%, and that's big companies and small companies. So that we are at the average and the norm. It's the real small leaks. You're going to get some of them just like mine. I don't think it was leaking more than 5 or 6. 4 hours maybe before I turned it off. I think it was more like 2 hours. So it was a lot of water, but there's probably lots of little leaks just like that all over the place.
Sure, not until they boil up.
Yeah, 15% is normal.
I was asked about when our hydrants are going to be updated and painted.
Hopefully this summer.
This summer?
Yeah,
oh, cool.
Yeah. And we need to do flow testing again just to be sure that those color coatings that are kind of universally recognized, yeah. Those color coatings are still accurate. And we've got three new hydrants on Rupel that are still yellow.
Yellow.
So we've got to do flow testing on those so that we can start updating our fire flow records and to make sure that our coding of those hydrants is as accurate as possible.
All right.
Cool.
Well, it is now 7:20 p.m., and this meeting is adjourned.